Welcome back to another episode of Queer Christian Family Values Podcast. I am your co-host, Alex Birchnell. We have our other co-host, which is Andrew Cox, and we're joined again by Chanley. If you are interested in staying up with all of the fun things we're going on with, then check out our website, queerchristianfamilyvalues.com, as well as our social media. If you would like to financially support all the things that we're doing, such as binder giveaways, free resources, and all that fun stuff, check out patreon.com/QCFB. And let's get into it. So, Andrew, why don't you start us off?
Right. So, last week we did part one of a two-parter on feminism versus the church. And I wanted to address that for a hot second and go, why does feminism feel like it's against our church culture today? When we look at our church culture today, it seems, as we heard from Chanley last week, that and Chanley, feel free to jump in on your own words, but it seems like women are in a secondary position that are not treated like they have a legitimate connection to God, right?
Yeah.
That.
Yeah.
Which is so cheery and so good. But no, it's there is something that happens in the church. And when we think about the church as both this holy institution, but also a worldly institution, because it exists in this world, even though it's supposed to do a holy thing, it means it is striving for betterment, but also in need of critique, because sometimes it adopts tendencies of the world as opposed to tendencies of heaven. Get on track, people. So while we're talking about feminism, and we're talking about participating in a positive radical feminist agenda, I wanted to introduce some texts and some ideas that are connected to what Paul has to say about women. Now, Paul is not always painted in the most feminist way. When people think about Paul and women, they don't usually think he's this great empowerer of women in the way that he presents information and the way that he acts. But I would argue that Paul, as a minister of inclusion, is actually advocating for women in the way that he writes, especially when you consider the time that he's writing it. That's my thesis.
When people say they use Paul to discriminate against women, what would you say to that, or how would you address that, I guess, like women being silent in church and all that fun stuff? That's a huge
No, I'm just trying to figure out how to say this kindly.
Are we past that?
I have a lot of love for the church, but I think I'm just consistently disappointed with what things we treat as unquestionable universal teachings and what things we treat like metaphors. Like, the book of James is inexplicably critical towards the wealthy not participating in the lives of the poor, to the extent that James is suggesting that, you know, they might not have a faith at all for the way that they treat the poor.
Yeah. Valid.
And we seem to treat that as some kind of like metaphor for not being kind. But then when we have a random teaching that says in Timothy that women should be silent, for example, it's like, well, it's the will of the Lord, what are you gonna do? And it's just like, I guess I'll just have to be, not only just have higher pay, but I guess my wife has to be silent. Like, it's this really weird buy-in into a toxic culture that we pretend is faithful when it's actually just lazy. Chanley, what you were about to say?
And then I can hear our daughter downstairs calling for us. I think it's really interesting what we'll use to kind of uphold worldly culture. Like, it's really interesting where we say, oh no, we're separate from the world. And then there are these ways that we just really deeply tie ourselves to how the world is, or in some cases, how the world used to be. And so there's this weird tug of war, kind of just like, where do we say we're of the world and we're not? And I think this is one of those topics where it's just like, no, we're gonna do this and we're not going to look towards the Bible necessarily for answers, but we're going to look to tradition for answers. And a lot of the times those traditions don't have to do with the church. They have to do with the world in a lot of ways. So we're kind of in this tug of war. We're like, this is how things used to be in the world, and that's what we're going to stick with. But we're going to, and so we're going to be apart from the world because of how we think now. But how we're being apart from the world doesn't set us apart in any good way. No. It actually takes away a lot of freedom and a lot of grace from the church.
Right. And like, I have this friend who recently said that his position is shifting on a couple of things. And it's because he was reading and realized that you're supposed to be able to measure a tree by its fruit. What is the good fruit for women in the church with the way that we're interpreting Paul? So when we look at Paul, Paul wrote a series of letters, and I would argue only one of them should be presented as the theological letter that Paul presents that should be like universal. But by and large, every single letter that Paul presents is an individual letter to an individual church. That doesn't mean that it doesn't apply. It definitely applies. But there are some teachings that were meant to address a specific situation at that individual congregation, which means that today it should address a specific situation in our congregations and should not be universal. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we forget sometimes that Paul wasn't writing these letters for us. Like, the Bible wasn't written to us necessarily. And to say that, well, Paul was writing this so we would know what to do down the road, like, that's not necessarily true. I think God in his power can like say like, no, this is going to be useful for like all these things. And just like, I'm not taking any of that, like the holiness out of that. But what I want to draw attention to is that these specific churches had problems that they ask an authority figure for advice on. Or in some cases, Paul's like, I've heard you're having this problem and I'm going to address this now. And there are always going to be things that we can take away, like these like very universal spiritual truths. But yeah, some of the things you're talking about, just like, you can't apply that across the board. Like, if we tell our kid how she needs to act in a specific situation in that exact moment and time, like, that's not going to be like a universal parenting rule necessarily. That's just going to be saying, hey, you're acting this way, you're having this problem, here's some guidance on exactly what you're going through in this moment. And that doesn't mean that any other parent ever has to apply that to any situation.
That's super solid, actually. That's really good. I hadn't thought about that. Because, like, when Maisie gets hot at home, she's allowed to, like, just undress and jump on a trampoline.
Yeah.
That is not the protocol in church.
Yeah, specifically in church, that's not the protocol.
Because nary a trampoline to be found.
There unless are some baptism crazy is way more fun. Children's ministry wings.
That's true. Because they, but they probably have like that like plush trampoline.
I think it's more the getting naked part that is.
Oh my god!
Not the general.
I focused on the wrong thing.
Yeah, you focused on the wrong thing.
Entirely.
Like we do sometimes with Paul's letters.
Yeah.
Tie in. Yay. We do so great. Okay, so let's give a great golly. This is going to be such a great podcast, and it's the last one of this series, guys.
It is.
Oh.
Why boo? Well, I mean, okay. I'm just like, yay, break. We can get caught up and...
That's real.
We can do nothing for Thanksgiving and Christmas.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. That way everybody
Everyone
has a break.
Donate to Patreon so we can get each of us a great Christmas present for each other.
There you go. Which includes paying bills. Yay.
Yay. Keep those Christmas lights on.
Crown in your jewel of heaven. Jewel in your crown of heaven? I don't even know. I give up. All right. So,
all right. It's been a night.
Okay. So, an example of a teaching of Paul that people present as universal that I believe is not universal is that women should be silent in church.
Yes.
You two being deeply moderate to conservative individuals, what's your hot take on that one? Sorry. Okay.
You get cuter every day.
Thanks.
Yeah, no, I think what you were saying kind of, I can't remember if you said this on the podcast or just like when we were talking beforehand, but just like, no, you did say it on the podcast, of just like these universal rules versus personal rules, but also what you were talking about of like there, if something Paul says contradicts itself in a later passage, that's a really good indicator that it's probably a very specific situation. And fully I think that specific passage is one where we've taken it out of context, not just out of the letter, but we've taken it out of the context of the language and like the situation of what was going on. Because a lot of times we don't have the backstory on why these letters were being written necessarily. Like, not really. Like, this isn't a documentary series. This is some historical letters that we have where we don't have the back and forth. These aren't things that we can go back and say, like, okay, I see exactly what's going on in the situation. This is so-and-so kept a journal on this and we know exactly what was going on from all these different perspectives. No, we just have, for the most part, just Paul. And we see the response to these situations. Are you holding a Littlest Pet Shop?
Yes, Paul? I am. Yes, I am.
He did that on the last one, or we have one podcast.
I'm fidgeting.
He's like holding
don't
like
break our monkey
children's toys.
Like, yeah, it's because our kids' toys are everywhere. He's recording in our daughter's room right now, and I'm in my office.
Well, he gets an office like our daughter's room, but that's fair.
Because our daughter's in our room.
Yeah.
Well, I hope
she's the boss, so
she's
that's real. So okay, like, and at some point. We should definitely talk about 1 Timothy because there's some pretty aggressive women language in that one. And if that's an individual letter, there was some drama in that church. And it was probably an elder's wife. Just very like, and I'm not like, I'm kind of kidding, but not really. Because there's like this very like, hey, situation. Because in that letter, we see this reference to seeking all humility. And also all this language about being quieter. And I think that that is an interesting notion for that letter and suggests that maybe there is a problem in that church with a specific woman or a couple women. And that's what they're trying to address. That's what's probably happening there. And my reference for why I believe that is when you look at 1 Corinthians 11, we see a clear teaching from Paul on how women should prophesy and pray in church. Which are really hard to do silently.
Yeah, no.
So, like, either Paul is writing universal truths and he's terrible at it, or he's addressing things that he's trying to come across in these individual ways to these individual congregations based on their individual needs. And that's probably a more accurate, that's probably taking the Bible more seriously than treating everything as some equal playing field when it probably isn't.
Mm-hmm. I mean, plus, like, if you go back to it, like, anything past what Malachi or any isn't even considered scripture, right, in the Bible. So you've got from Genesis to Malachi, that's actual scripture. And then you've got the Gospels, then you've got, the histories and then all that. So if we're taking letters and we're calling it scripture, that in and of itself is problematic, in my opinion.
No, I agree because that's such a good point because the New Testament wasn't this assembled set of writings yet. And so if anyone in the New Testament writing, do what?
I said there was just so much flying around.
Exactly. And so like, if they're saying according to scriptures, they didn't have assembled letters. They're writing it right then. They're the OGs of the New Testament, right? And so they're it's making it happen in that moment. That's a great point. And so like when we deal with these individual teachings, then we have to ask the question, okay, but what do we do with all this stuff that still seems so hella oppressive for women, right?
Mm-hmm. Hella.
Hella. Hella.
So.
That is. Go ahead.
Oh no, I was just gonna say like, what would you address, like, because I know, you know, we all know or have heard the scriptural text or churches throwing in about women being submissive and all that other stuff. So how would you counter that? Like, what pro-women arguments in the Bible would you showcase?
So,
or do you want to talk about that at all?
No. Let's talk about it. So when, like with our daughter, if we want her to arrive at a certain point at a certain time, we're not going to talk to her about how we want her to be when she's 18 right now. Mm-hmm. Even though we want her to be that way when she's 18.
Yeah.
Whatever that thing is in this hypothetical. What we would do instead is we would go, if we're heading that away, what thing can we tell her where she is now that'll take her one step closer? Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally.
And so when we deal with the language about women submitting, like there's it's in Ephesians, and the text is, you know, women submit to your husbands in equal measure to how you submit to the Lord, and men love your wives the way that Christ loves the church. Back to back, boom boom.
Yeah.
So when you're doing interpretive work, you need to ask who has the power. Who has the power in this text? Because that will often help you, and can often help you determine who this text is for. Because it's not like there was this aggressive suffragette movement in first century Rome. It's not like there was like this radical feminist agenda in Ephesus. Like, we don't hear, like, there's no historical proof to suggest that. Like, when you look at the rights of women throughout history, at this time in history, women were 100% considered property. I mean, and that lasted for a much longer time. This wasn't just a first century Rome problem. The children were considered property of the husband. A man could divorce his wife for no reason whatsoever. If he did so, she would not have right to home. She would not have the ability to work. Women weren't allowed to work. Like they have no power in the story, women.
Yeah.
And so it's not like submission is this radical teaching for these women. Submission is the entire lifestyle of a woman in the first century Rome. But Paul is adding an amendment. He's taking a step in the right direction. He's saying, submit to your husbands in the exact way you would submit to Christ.
Ah.
And so it's not open-ended, do whatever your husband wants anymore. It's, you can submit to your husband, but you will do it in the way that Christ that would have you submit to him. Wow. And husbands, love your wives, which is not a command in first century Rome. It is not an obligation that a man loves his wife. And we don't think about that, but it is not an obligation. It's not an obligation to love property. And that's how Roman men were viewed women.
Wow.
Yeah, the radical statement in that isn't wives submit to your husbands. It is husbands love your wife as Christ has loved the church. Because there's no, the twist ending there, the statement that's getting turned on its head is the husbands love your wife. And so, like, nowadays, that's kind of like, okay, well, that seems like the bare minimum. But that's because we as a world and a country have gone through this entire feminist process of, you know, just women aren't property, children aren't property, women have rights. Like, I mean, technically not legally in the United States, but still. And so
Okay.
Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Okay. That was a hot take, but it wasn't the hot take. and so it seems like a radical statement now, and so it's really easy to like just throw out that card and be like, oh yeah, that's the trump card of just like, see, it says wives submit your husbands. It's like, yeah, but if you put it in the context of like what was happening in the world right then, that sentence really, even with the as you would submit to Christ, probably didn't mean jack to the women as something special, if that makes sense. Like, when you're told your entire life, submit, submit, to submit, there might be like a little bit more grace in that, okay, well, if I'm just doing this, but I'm doing it in a way that I would do for Christ. But the, like he said, like the radical idea is that men, don't treat your wives like property. Treat them as it, like, love them in a way that you're willing to die for them as church died, or as Christ died for the church. Mm-hmm. So
based on what you said, Chanley, on how it's basically calling husbands to a greater love, if there is a teaching today through that text, it is, hey, husbands, stop taking advantage of what you think your wife's role is and what is a greater love that Christ calls you to. That's the teaching today. It's like, are you taking advantage of what the world says your wife's role is instead of listening to how deeply the love of Christ calls you to loving your wife? So it's an overthrowing of a patriarchal structure for a Christ-like structure. Chanley, bouncing off of what you said a minute ago, like, if we were to read this text about women submitting to husbands and husbands loving their wives today, I think you're right. We wouldn't focus on the submission of women, because that was an understood in Paul's time. And because of the patriarchal structures that we have today, that's an understood in our time as well. And so if we were going to say anything today from that text, it'd be, hey, husbands, what worldly structures are you taking advantage of to not have a greater Christ-like love for your wife? Since this is the last episode of the season, to wrap up the feminist inclusivity of Paul, I'd like to break a little bit from the Pauline literature for a second and instead go to what I think is usually presented as a very chauvinist text in the Bible, The Woman at the Well, and do it with a feminist reading. That's how I'd like to close out today. And I think this could be really constructive and actually accurate to what the Bible is trying to say. So we're in John 4:4. Jesus had to go through Samaria. He came to a Samaritan city called Sychar, or however you want to pronounce it, which was near the land of Jacob, and had given to, which he had given to his son Joseph. Jacob's well was there. Jesus was tired from his journey, so he sat down at the well. It was around noon. A Samaritan woman came to the well to draw water. Jesus said to her, "Give me some water to drink." His disciples had gone into the city to buy him some food. Okay, so this is Jesus alone with a woman. Okay. We have Jesus, a Jewish man, who is choosing to be alone, not just with a woman, but a Samaritan woman. A Samaritan woman who is considered multiracial, multi-religious. Like, she doesn't have a pure Jewish bloodline, so she wouldn't be considered the chosen people. She is a woman in a world where, like, men and women could not be alone together. And so Jesus is breaking all these cultural norms to address a biracial, multi-religious woman, multinational woman, and while also being alone. And this is where we find the story start. The Samaritan woman asks, "Why do you, a Jewish man, ask for something to drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" She knows what the standard is at the time, because Jews and Samaritans didn't associate with each other. Jesus responded, "If you recognized God's gift and who is saying to you, 'Give me some water to drink,' you would be asking him, and he would be giving you living." The woman said to him, "Sir, you don't have a bucket and the well is deep. Where would you get this living water? You aren't greater than our father Jacob, are you? He gave this well to us and he drank from it himself, as did his sons and his livestock." And Jesus answered, "Everyone who drinks this water will be thirsty again, but whoever drinks from the water that I will give will never be thirsty again. The water that I give will become in those who drink it a spring of water that bubbles up into eternal life." Okay, we have a woman who is not part of the who is not one of the chosen Jewish people. In fact, doesn't even associate with Jewish people. And then we have Jesus here saying, "I can offer you the greatest of blessing, and from you, all these blessings will come forth." In a time where we're reading these other texts about how we're debating, "Oh, I don't know, should women be silent or not?" And it's like, "Oh, should they only teach children?" It's like, "Oh, I don't even know, should they wear head coverings? I don't even know." Jesus is saying, you who are called unchosen and who are called to be submissive are blessed and guaranteed and chosen for something to be in you that'll spring forth to give blessings to all people. It gets better, because we screw this woman over so hard when we read this text and we get it so wrong, and we need to fix this. So Jesus answered, you know, whoever drinks this, they won't be thirsty again, and it will bubble up into eternal life. The woman said, sir, give me this water so that I will never be thirsty and will never need to come here to draw water again. And he said, go get your husband and come back here. The woman said, I don't have a husband. You are right to say, I don't have a husband, Jesus answered. You've had five husbands, and the man you are with now isn't your husband. You've spoken the truth. What we've done in this text is we've pretended this woman is some kind of gold digger or black widow or, you know, homewrecker, and is jumping from man to man to man, as if in first century Roman world, a woman has that much power and has the ability to control a household that much. As if Jesus himself had not already given a teaching about how men should not be divorcing their wives for any reason other than adultery. Like, this is not a world where this woman's manipulating the system. This is a world where this woman has been used and abused and traded out five times from household to household to household. And now the only reason she has a place to live is because she's shacking up with some guy that isn't her husband. And we've treated her like Jesus is addressing sin, but he never says to her, go and sin no more.
No, he didn't.
He's saying, I see what this world that got me backwards has done to you. I see it. I see what has happened to you. You are right. And I know what your reality is. And you are worthy of this living water. In a world that tells you, you're only worthy enough to go to a well.
I think something else that's kind of important, like when you, so two things with that. I think when you read from that lens, you hear the desperation on her part of just like, if you have something that can get me out of the life I'm in, I want it. Mm-hmm. Because I think otherwise we're just, we kind of ignore that part there where she's just like, yes, please. If I never have to come here again, if I never have to come outside the city just to get water again, I want that. And I think kind of like reading it flipped on its head a little bit of just like, Jesus knew from the beginning that this is who she was. Because he says, like, you're right. You were right to tell me this. I know you've told me the truth because I know your history. I know your background. I know what you've been through. He doesn't tell her after that, I will give you this. He tells her before that. So he's known this entire time what she's been through and how her life has been. And that's the person he's addressing. He's addressing her with full understanding. And he's saying, you are worthy of this that I'm giving you. And you have the ability to pass it on. I guess I have a third thing too of just like, so often in the Bible and so often in the church, like women are told that they can bless the world through kids, by having kids, by teaching kids, all that. Like, just how many times kids were pushed at me as part of my ministry of just like this whole be fruitful and multiply. God, that gets shoved down women's throat. And it's always in a literal sense of just pop out as many babies as you can. And like that still happens. That happens in non-denominational churches. It happens in Baptist churches of God. Like I've been to a few and I've heard it everywhere.
Yeah.
And here he is using this very, like, in a weird way, like I guess for lack of better term, like this reproductive language with her. That has nothing to do with children. That has nothing to do with like actual reproduction. Mm-hmm. You hear the language he's using, and if you just switched out a few things, you could see where that would be about kids. And he's using a lot of language that kind of I've heard in that vein, but he's saying, like go and tell people about this.
Yeah.
As opposed to it being like that kind of reproductive language. So yeah, I had three things instead of two. But
it works.
They were all fantastic. So
correct me if you disagree, but like when Jesus is like teaching, for instance, or even really talking, he doesn't mince words very often. Like we talked about how Jesus is sassy, but like if he's addressing something, he'll mention sin if he wants this to be specifically about sin. Like the adulterous woman that was going to get stoned. First of all, it was a lot bigger than her sin that what was going on in that story, but he did mention go and sin no more, like you were talking about. But like you said, he didn't say that. He didn't mention anything about children or making babies. He didn't mention anything about her marriage issues. Go find your original husband and like fix things. No, it's almost like he didn't put it on her to do anything other than just accept what he's offering. And I kind of had almost an emotional reaction to it because it was like, Jesus was addressing neglect, abuse. He was addressing just a lot of almost validating her feelings in this one, you know, this only like a couple verses. Like he addressed everything that she was dealing with and saying, you're still perfect. You know, you're still pure. You're still worthy. And affirmation statements in a sense, all of that, and none of it had to do with what we have completely bastardized this entire verse to reflect in modern churches. So that was my takeaway.
Chandler, do you agree with that?
Yeah.
So it would be one thing if Jesus was going, hey, I found this one woman that I'm going to validate. That'd be one thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. He goes further in a big way. This is what he has to say. The woman said, I'm starting in verse 19, "Sir, I see that you're a prophet. Our ancestors worshiped on this mountain, but you and your people say that it is necessary to worship in Jerusalem or in the temple." Now, how did the Spirit of God get encountered in the temple?
Oh, that's not a rhetorical question.
Yeah.
Through a male priest.
Through a male priest, that's right. And could any male priest could any man from the priestly line do it?
No, and I think another important thing is like women weren't even allowed to talk to that priest.
No, not at all. So she's saying, my people know that God can be worshipped on a mountain, but your people say that he has to be worshipped in Jerusalem. Not just in Jerusalem, in the temple. Not just in the temple, in the Holy of Holies. Not just in the Holy of Holies, but only by men. And not just by men, but by priestly men that women can't even address. Now, is she saying all of those things? Is she making a feminist argument? No, but she is addressing a reality of worship for people, right? Which, Chandler, I think that speaks to what you said in our first podcast, which is that mm-hmm. women are treated as people without a direct connection to God.
Yeah, we've taken the temple and we've turned it into our marriage, or opposite gender marriage, specifically just like kind of like the heterosexual marriage of just like men are still women's intercessor for God. Because when we say, husbands, you're the spiritual authority over this woman, what we've done is we've placed another human being in between a person and God.
Mm-hmm.
And if that isn't anti-biblical, I don't know what is. I mean, just genuinely to say, yeah, no, now that you're married, so there are two ways of reading that. Of like, now that you're married, you don't have direct access to God anymore. You have to go through your priest, your husband, to have access to God, which is something, I don't know if y'all remember the whole like tearing of the curtain temple being a metaphor or anything like that, but
that whole
thing was supposed to end, you know, with Jesus's death and resurrection. But there's also the other, like a harsher reading sometimes that, you know, a lot of people believe that if a woman's not married, I mean, what spiritual connection does she have to God? And so that's kind of like one of those small ways that we don't necessarily think about where we say that women don't have a direct connection to God. Like I said last week, of that being something that I think our baseline is wrong on. I think that's a really good example of that. Of, you know, she's saying, it's like, okay, so I have access to God here, but your people say that only a certain few have access to God. And I think, unfortunately, we've decided to go back to that tradition and take it a step further. And it's not just in the church proper, it's in the homes of so many women. Just this wedge between us and God in a lot of ways.
And I think that's affirmed firmly in this text. Like, as you mentioned, the temple curtain, and we should also address, like, when you look at the, like, older covenants, the mountaintop was basically like the Holy of Holies, right? Mm-hmm. So even when she's saying worship God on the mountain, like, who gets access to the mountain? I mean, there's still some patriarchal stuff going on there, right?
Oh, yeah.
And so, like, and not to disagree with you, I'm just adding to what you said. Yeah. And so this is what Jesus says to her about this. He said, "Believe me, woman, when I tell you the time is coming that you and your people will worship the Father, neither on the mountain nor in Jerusalem. You and your people worship what you do not know. We worship what we know because of the salvation that first comes to the Jews. But the time is coming and is here when true worshipers will worship in spirit and in truth. The Father looks for those who worship him this way. God is spirit, and it is necessary to worship God in spirit and in truth."
What a way to end that.
What?
I said, what a way to end that. I mean, it with powerful statements.
Well, yeah, he's saying like he's addressing three barriers. One, the ethnocentric of it being just for the Jews, which is being torn down because now there's something different that is going to open the doors. The worship on the mountain, which is the, you know, for the Hebrew Bible, it really a patriarchal separation, not just from between women and God, but from most people and God. And then the Holy of Holies in Jerusalem, which is the separation of, which is like this like classist structure of like the priestly line, and it's ethnocentric and it's male centric. And he's saying the time is now when people, not men, people can worship God in spirit and truth. And then Jesus sends her back to her town to tell people. This woman wasn't some lost gold digging sinner. She was an apostle sent by Jesus to evangelize before his coming, before his crucifixion, that there is a way of being, and it is set aside not just for the Jews, but for the multiracial, not just for the holy people of one nation, but for multinational people, not just for men, but for women. And she will be the one that goes and teaches and preaches. That's how you read the woman at the well.
I honestly, if there's anything to end the podcast on, I think that this reading was perfect. It wrapped Paul's, you know, inclusion ministry together. It talked about, you know, the contradictions and just how to better get the context. It basically was like, hey, context is important in whatever you're going to do in regards to the Bible. And we learned, you know, all the way back in the beginning of our podcast, you taught us how to read Paul's letters with greater understanding that it's specific to each church. And now we've learned history. We've learned there's a lot that we've gone through in this series. So since we're coming up to the last few minutes of being able to record, what would you want to say to everybody as we've gone through this crazy, awesome journey together for this series?
Chanley, I really think that in a lot of ways you should have the final word on this one, especially sure. Considering the insight that you've given us going into this. We've gotten a chance to speak about what Paul has to say, but also what the kind of man Jesus is and the problems in the church, but the kind of world that the church can be. We're talking about inclusion ministry. Do you have a word for us?
I guess if I was to summarize kind of everything I've been trying to get at, it's that there are no caveats to God's children. Like, there's no separation There's no hierarchy within that. There's no if, ands, or buts. There's no prerequisites. It is just every single person is a child of God. And if there's no hierarchy in that, if there's no prerequisites, there's nothing that separates any of us from each other when it comes to how we interact with God, the highest authority, I don't think we as a church can justify having any other sort of hierarchy or separation within our church, whether that be in our church structure, whether that be in how the church talks about relationships. I think we should expand our understanding and our application of that, of there is no hierarchy apart from us and God. There is no separation between any of us. And yeah, that would be, I think, just the best way to summarize what we're trying to get across. And I would say that applies not only to what we've been talking about in terms of feminism, but inclusion ministry in general too.
Mm-hmm. All set.
Well, I want to thank our listeners and viewers for sticking with us this far. I know we've had breaks between episodes and all that fun stuff that happens with life and COVID and trying to do this based on the internet and Zoom and all that fun stuff. But we are going on an extended break for our podcast. We are going to be recording. We're going to be fundraising. We're going to be doing a lot of stuff to prep for next season. We don't have a date for that coming out yet. If you want to stay up to date with everything going on, please keep an eye on our website, which is where everything kind of culminates together, queerchristianfamilyvalues.com. Check out our social media. And as always, subscribe patreon.com/QCFE to help us meet our goals so that we can come out strong in season two. And with that,
come out strong.
Right.
Sorry.
Okay.
But yeah, with that, we'll see you in season two, everybody. Bye.
Yeah. Bye.
Bye.